Hello, I'm Mara Powell. I'm here with Carol Schroeder, and she was the marketing director for the Detroit Renaissance from 1983 to 1993. Hello, Carol, and I just want to thank you for sharing your story and spending your time with me today.
It's my pleasure. It was one of the best times of my life. We had a lot of fun, but we worked really hard.
Well, first, I'd like to know a little about your background. Where were you born?
I was born downriver, so I've always been in the Detroit area, down in Wyandotte, nice family place. Education was always stressed in my family. It was very important. So I wandered off to Michigan State and kept being involved in special events and special projects, it seems, naturally all the time.
And you went to Michigan State, you said?
Yes.
And what did you get a degree in there?
Communications. You know, from there you start going off and doing other things, and you find, by golly, you keep going into the same area and expanding upon it. And I think if you're having fun at what you're doing, you're better at it too.
Now, before you got into the Detroit Renaissance, you were an independent fundraising consultant. Can you tell me how you got into that?
Right. It seems like I've always been an independent contractor. Almost always. Ended up working special projects, but special projects and fundraising involves the ability to be a salesperson as well. So you have to learn how to figure out what you have, what you kind of own or your bosses own that is attractive to other people or is of interest to other people. And I did some of that through some Ford dealers here. We would be doing new car showing. We would be doing shows at the local Ford plants here with automobiles, and they're always it's a special event trying to get people's attention and stand out from the other people who are promoting the same thing as well. So you got to figure out how to make yourself special.
Was any of the independent contractor work related to any of the work you did with the Detroit Renaissance?
Actually, I was doing some business with a company that put together incentive programs. I would go out and set up these programs for them where they would be able to reward their employees for certain accomplishment levels. And if it was in sales, it's obvious what they were doing there, but it might be something else within the community or within the company. Meeting their goals. And I was working with Federal Mogul at the time, one of my people, and they asked me, they told me they had heard about the Grand Prix coming to town, and did I know if anything was available, merchandise was available, tickets were available, so they could have something themed, a party like that. And I said, sure, which of course I did not. But I knew that if you go to a special event, you can figure that out pretty quickly. So I told them I'd get back to them in about a week or so. And that's the first time I called Detroit Renaissance and got down to them. And it was a very impressive meeting, without a doubt.
Would you say that's how you started working with the Detroit Renaissance?
Yeah, actually, I went in there asking them questions, and they found out that I knew a lot of people in the area. Anyways, from the other things that I had done, they had two women there and two marketing guys there who were from Ohio, I believe, and they somehow had tied up with them to do some marketing here, and I'm not sure it was going that well, but they called me and asked me if I'd be willing to work part-time to try to gain some interest, you know, in what was going on. And boy, I mean, what an invitation. I was even going to get my own business card that said Detroit Grand Prix on it, you know. So I was pretty impressed with myself and with the facility. It was just so cool. When I went in there the second time, I went into a woman's office and we chatted about what, you know, they wanted me to do and what resources they had that were available to people. And we started talking at great length. But when I went to her office and I saw the maps and the pictures and all of these things around me and the hustle and bustle of the race, I thought to myself, someday I want to work in this office. And, you know, within a few years, I was working in that office full time. And so goes to show you about having goals. It's very important. And from there, it just expanded. I mean, it just every year I stayed around, and you know, it got to a point where that was the only thing that I was doing, because it's very intensive. But Bob McCabe, the president of Detroit Renaissance, since I was an independent contractor, had no problem with me in our off season going off to do other things. So I'd pick up my pen, and in fact, for 3 years after the race was over, I would go. I went to the Thanksgiving parade, and for 3 years, because there are a lot of the same corporate people, you know, working there. And so I went with her to produce some of the events and help them out and work with some of the sponsors. So, yeah, it just expands once people know that you get it and have the connections. That's the most important thing.
Now you say that there is a two-person marketing department. Who was the other person?
Yeah, my partner was Baker Brown. Now talk about an interesting background. He was the general manager for years for the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus. So his talents were such that he was a great facilities manager. When we were setting something up, he could look at a field and know where we should put everything, you know, that kind of conceptual stuff. So that was really helpful when you're building. Really what we did is built a city into a city. You know, nothing was there, and then we had to put it all there and take it all away. So he had, and his account, oh, he was an accountant too. His accounting acumen was just wonderful. So we used that a great deal as well too. So he had been there the year before, and the year after they thought they could do better with marketing at Detroit Renaissance. So they told us all to clean out our desks and go. And I thought, okay. I thought I had a job. I thought things went well. I had three different radio stations at that point in time. And you know how competitive they are, working in Hart Plaza together. but, you know, there were a bunch of things like that. And sure enough, I thought we were done, and I got a call back. And I said, oh, hi, how are you doing? And they said, could you come down and talk to us again? We're interested. And sure. So I went down to talk to them, and they wanted me to come back. And with a certain amount of loyalty to the other people, I said, how come, what's going on? And they said, no, we just want you to come back. So I felt a little concerned about that, but there was nothing I could do. So went back and found out that I was going to be working with the Baker Brown. And it was a great relationship because we had different skills that overlapped, and we just got along famously, laughed a lot, worked hard, you know, and just supported each other in every way that we could. But that's what the whole team was like there. That's why it was such a special place to work.
And what year did you start working with
them? 83. So that was the second year of the race. I did go the first year of the race as a spectator, and I thought, wow, this is amazing.
And the race show was the Detroit Grand Prix.
Pardon me?
The Grand Prix.
Yeah. So,
what were some of the major corporations in the Metro Detroit area that you worked with?
Oh, goodness. Well, the first 6 or 7 years, we were doing Formula One. So we brought some of the local people were in, the big three and, you know, other people. But because it was international, now people in the United States did not know what a big impact the Formula One has on the world, really. It was much better known in Europe at that time than here. IndyCar racing, you know, Alonso, Mario Andretti, those are the people that they knew, but they didn't know those other guys. So I was getting phone calls from all over the world, from people who were coming to Alfa Romeo, Ferrari, you know, the mobile oil people internationally, so that kind of thing. But when we moved to CART after 7 years, no more Formula One, then it was more the local people, you know, more. But always a lot of automotive suppliers, always automotive suppliers. But in the beginning, you know, we were working with Hudson's, who was in town, and Stroh's, you know, those guys were around, the utility people, Michigan Bell. It just was a long list. But as far as international goes, and some of the teams, like Chip Ganassi, would have that kind of thing. There would be the bottler, the soft drink people, Coca-Cola, probably. And, of course, if you're going to have an event like that, you've got to have a beer sponsor, right? Mm-hmm. So it was very different between Formula One and really the American racing series because we were dealing with people from Australia like Foster's Beer. And those are the ones we were dealing with at that time. And then we changed to Miller's or Bud or something like that if it was so there was a definite difference in the sponsors. But there would be about 35 hospitality suites each year. If we did our job properly, which I think we did a pretty good job, the attrition rate was pretty low, which gave us more time to try to go out and get more people in,
Now you mentioned the volunteers. What types of volunteers, what type of people would volunteer and what did they do?
They are wonderful people. They were so committed to us. Oftentimes, I would have the same people for years and years and years. I had about 200 volunteers assigned to me. Okay. So, and you say, wow, not really, because if you realize that we had 35 suites, which when we were downtown are scattered all over downtown, I was going from Cobo Hall down to the end of Atwater. I mean, it just was all over the place between Cobo and the Renaissance Center and beyond. So golf carts were very important. But we would have a group of volunteers that were assigned to that location. And they always had their own table, their phone. Remember, we didn't have cell phones when we began. So we were still using hard line stuff. Isn't that amazing? And so they would be there, have their phone, and could call us if they had a problem. We're spread out all over the place. And they became absolutely wonderfully, immeasurably, oh, they were worth so much to us. And I still stay in touch with some of them. But these are people who had jobs. Some people would take vacation time to come and work with us. Well, you figure out what we are. We're Detroit Automotive, and they were really interested in racing too. But it was a pretty good gig for them too to be in the hospitality areas. They were troubleshooters for us. They told us if something was wrong. And things went wrong sometimes. But we had a lot of really good, our contractors were really a big help in trying to fix some of those problems. So spread out all over, and don't forget signage. Signage was important in areas like this too. So signage had to be placed everywhere so people knew where they were going. Transportation, security. I didn't have the security people, but as far as making sure that the caterer, there's a lot of access points that were closed, and the caterers had to get through, and you didn't really know until you got there the first day in some ways, as to what you should do. The caterers would buy out a restaurant in the Renaissance Center for prep, which was a really smart idea. There's no electricity, okay, no phone service. There's nothing. There's no running water. It's a curious challenge to set up this town within a town.
So the volunteers pretty much took care of
Oh,
those operations.
well, they were wonderful. Plus, there was another group that helped with the construction of the track, actually. And just think, we didn't pay them. Now, as a not-for-profit, we couldn't have done it without them. There's no way, And they were so committed. We would have a debrief at the end of the day in my trailer, and the heads of each area would come in and tell us what went wrong, what we can fix that night, what needed to be done. If it was going to rain the next day, we knew that to remind them to put the umbrellas down, to make sure that the chairs were tipped up, because otherwise the chairs would be filled with water. You see what I mean? I know how many electrical outlets there are in each of the hospitalities. I mean, you had to know all this minutia, in order to. And we had bags of towels and whatnot so that they could take them out and wipe off, grandstands or whatnot. But there's a huge amount of things that have to be done.
Besides the races, what are some of the other events that you worked on while you were marketing director of the Detroit Renaissance?
Well, now, it was kind of split up a bit. I didn't have as much to do. We also did fireworks back then, and we did the what was the Montreux Jazz Festival back then. So my responsibilities were much less, although I tried to do some cross promotion with my people to get them interested in doing those things as well. Well, Jazz Fest, it was really, that was McCabe, the president of Detroit Renaissance. That really was what he did, what he started with. He loved jazz, and it was really, really well done. So yeah, not as much with those two, but with the fireworks, for instance, Hudson's was involved with the Detroit Grand Prix. They sponsored something called Free Pre-Day. So what we tried to do is get an image of the fact that Hudson's was responsible for having a free day on Friday, as though they paid for all the tickets for that day. That's not exactly how it works, but they were able to associate themselves with that day, and they cross-promoted it, in their stores and whatnot. Well, Hudson's also did the fireworks, so then now I'm involved in all of that, making sure everything's going smoothly and we're not switching people on them, so that's kind of how that worked.
What were some of the goals in creating these events?
Image, to begin with, that was really important. At that time, Coleman Young was our mayor, and there were some image issues and some things that were going on. Devil's Night, crime, and whatnot. But people didn't ask about that because they understood that this was something that was meant to make things better. If you saw the videotapes of the races, you would want to go to Detroit to visit it because they look so nice. And in as far as internationally, the Formula One race was broadcast internationally. Cool, everybody thought, yeah, it's a nice place. And then the same thing, well, IndyCar was more within the United States than internationally when we did that. But Belle Isle looked super. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but Belle Isle looked fantastic. You go to the point of the island and you take a shot of downtown Detroit across the river, and you're seeing Canada here. We had guys who would come in from overseas who couldn't believe that we had a country across the river that was so close with such a minimal amount of security. We take that for granted, but they go, no, yes, look, another country. So image was really, really most important thing. And I used to tell McCabe, I wish I had been in a board meeting when he had gone to his board and said, I want to bring Formula One to the streets of Detroit. Can you imagine? I wonder if anyone laughed or thought, how are you going to do that? But they went along with it. I think it was really a good thing though for the city when you think of all the people who knew about it, who came here, who went back and said nice things about us.
Can you tell me about coordinating hospitality areas for VIP guests? What type of VIP guests?
Okay, so the VIP, the hot corporate hospitality I mentioned earlier, we'd have about 35 every year come, a little bit more, a little bit less. And so there's 35 of those. Basically, they're 50 by 40 foot. Okay, there's a tent, tables, chairs, and we would build a mini grandstand in them so they'd be facing the track so they could, watch the races from there. And all of those would have to be coordinated with the food and beverage people too, and they had 100 tickets for each of the 3 days. That way they could split it up. They could invite 300 different people. And they'd also call me, and of course they'd want a zillion worker passes. And I could understand that. We give them some worker passes because they've got employees who are working this for them and signing in and whatnot. And you don't want to use the tickets that you purchased for your worker bees, so we took care of that for them. But we encouraged them after we got some experience to do some things to make sure people weren't crashing the party. I said, I highly recommend that you have somebody checking them in, at the little entranceway. I mean, we are checking tickets and whatnot, but make sure you are checking them so they're not, somebody's brother-in-law isn't coming when you really wanted the brother to come, who was the corporate person that you wanted to impress with your generosity. So you learn those things after a while. So they're spread out all over downtown. And you've got to deal with, okay, 35 times 100, 3,500 people, okay? Plus, and they also had an opportunity to purchase an extra 50. So by the time I'm done, I'm dealing with about 5,000 people that are very important to those people. And there's just a couple of us, And everything's a crisis for them, you understand. So you've got to figure out what's the most important thing to do. But our volunteers, again, with some experience, were able to sort through that. And we did have security in the area that could help them if somebody was being belligerent or whatnot. But it was quite the time, yeah. I had Ford Motor Company when we were on Belle Isle in around the fountain, the big fountain. It's beautiful. They had it up and running, and it was gorgeous for us. Unfortunately, I got a phone call that said it was starting to overflow. It was draining into the suites. So what you do, what people want to know is that you're doing something about it, okay, and that you care. So I called our people, and we had the city was there, obviously, and so they went and made sure the pumps were working. And so I went to go and see my guy, and he says, "Oh," I says, "listen, we got right on it right away. I knew this was important." He says, "They came through with a squeegee. They wiped everything up. The fountain's looking beautiful." And I said, "I'm so glad. You know that we'll do whatever we can to make it right. But I want you to know, next year, the price of your suite is going to go up because I'm going to charge you for waterfront property." And he cracked up. But I always tried to keep him. At that point, it wasn't a crisis anymore. We were kidding around like we usually do, and he was ready to go back to his people and have fun and know that we were going to take care of it. So that's what we did.
What type of dealings did you have with city officials?
The city official thing mostly went through really Eric, some other people that dealt directly with the city. We dealt with parks and rec. We didn't have to deal with the mayor's office or any of that. We would get approval through people in our office who were really doing, the big production promotion, who were at Detroit Renaissance permanently throughout the year because they kept relationship up with the city all the time. I didn't have that responsibility. My responsibility was more with the sponsors and with the, the suite holders and group ticket sales and whatnot. But the parks and rec people, once they were told what we were going to do. The hardest part was the first couple of years where you didn't know what was going to happen, or how to fix something. After a while, you knew if that went wrong, you'd go, "Oh, oh, okay, that's fine. We know what to do. We know who to call." So it went okay. It was not bad for us. By the time the approval got to us, the hard part was done, the negotiating. So, we were okay.
So you personally didn't do much negotiating
Not
with the city
with the city.
officials. How did people's bad impressions of Detroit affect your dealings with business leaders?
Again, not that much. I'd mentioned, they knew there were things going on. The people who were based here were already involved in and concerned about the image, anyways. So they knew that that's what we were trying to do, and they knew that was part of what they were trying to do. Years after the race, that I was with it, I was talking to a gentleman I used to work with from Dodge Chrysler, and I said to him, I was always amazed that we were able to get all of you three guys, the big head marketing guys from all three, in a room to talk about, that's unheard of, what they were going to do for a single event to make sure they didn't overlap and everybody was able to sign their name to something that they owned, like a part of it, And I said, I just was so impressed that you would help us try to improve the image of Detroit. And he said to me, "We knew that, and that's why we were there, that it was our responsibility to try to, help. Plus, it's an automotive event." But I thought, that's pretty cool that they would put their marketing, behind them, their competitiveness behind them to make sure that we would be successful. That was very nice.
So it seems that like they all had the same goals as
Yeah,
you.
yeah, yeah. And once they were signed on, their goal was to use this tool as best they could to stand out, amongst others. And they did. They were full. Once they got going, if there was a golf tournament on TV that same day, they would make sure.
Can we pause? Should I pause it?
Yeah.
What was something that you were most proud of accomplishing with the Detroit Renaissance?
I think in explaining to you how people were really coming together and working together, that was really something to see when everybody was working towards the same goal. You don't see that usually, as I was saying. It's usually very competitive. The market is extremely competitive, and you're trying to outdo the other guy. And in this case, we were all working together, and I think that was good. And the other thing was that move to Belle Isle. I had more responsibility when we moved to Belle Isle to try to build something from scratch and build another city with nothing there, less there than we had downtown even. So I'm proud of that, and I'm proud of our relationship with our sponsors and our suite people. I still have copies somewhere of some of the letters that were sent to Bob McCabe about what a pleasant experience they had, and they felt that we went beyond the call of duty to try to take care of them, and that's pretty nice. That doesn't happen very often. So and I was able to do things with them after the fact too. So that was fine.
Was there anything you wanted to accomplish while you were with the Detroit Renaissance, but for one reason or another, you couldn't?
I think I wish that the relationship that we had in that office could have carried on and spread beyond, and not just ended, like when the race was over, boom, that was done. I wished it could have continued on in other areas. But even the relationship that we had amongst ourselves, I found that even after I left, Bob McCabe used to tell us that he spoiled us for other jobs, and he was right, because we would have stayed all night long to help somebody else out in that office who had a problem that had to be solved for the race. And I've seen that teamwork is not as common anymore. It really isn't. Every man's out for himself, it's too bad. Not all the time, but it was just a very unique experience. And for a while, I think we have that more now downtown than we did back then, but it didn't maintain for as long as I had hoped it would. And of course, the race went away for a while, and one of the reasons that went away is because it became a for-profit. When it was a not-for-profit, we were doing it for lovely reasons. But you give that to somebody who is a for-profit company, and the personality changes. And I think that's really, really what happened. I was sad to see that happen. So.
Why do you think that there wasn't it didn't your work didn't continue beyond the races?
Well, Bob McCabe retired, first of all. And the last year that we were doing it without him was awful. I mean, it was just awful. We didn't get the support, that we needed. And without his foresight, when the board decided to get out of the events, it just dropped. The support was gone for us. So we did it, but without that backup by your people, it's just gone. And two, let's see, the fireworks was given to the Thanksgiving parade, which made sense. They did a nice job. They still do a nice job with it. And then really the Jazz Festival kind of went on by itself. It's working extremely well now too. It's got a main supporter as well, so that's going fine. And then the race couldn't just go away. The race had so much value. We'd already built it up and had lists of people who already were committed to it, that it was had some value to it, so it had to be purchased, so to speak, in order to transfer over to another owner. So we got three legitimate bids, and I saw them, and we were comparing them, and McCabe had to make the final decision. And like I said, it went to a company that was a for-profit company, and it just changed. So that was that. And sure enough, eventually, not too long after that, they stopped running it downtown, around Belle Isle, and then Mr. Penske resurrected it recently for the last couple of years. So it's good to see it going. It should be here. Belle Isle is just a beautiful place.
What year was the last year with McCabe?
With McCabe, it would have been 92, I believe.
Can you tell me a little bit about when you moved on from the Detroit Renaissance? Why did you leave and what did you move on to next?
Well, the race was sold, and so a lot of us were just let go. The company who bought it brought its own people in. So, that was that. As a matter of fact, I was so concerned about my people, the people I've been working with for years. I called each one of them when I was leaving, and I told them that the race was going to continue on. I know they were going to be in good hands. It's not a problem. And when they least expected it, I was going to call them again with some other project and ask them to open their checkbook again for me. And it was fine. I didn't have to do that, but I felt that was the responsible thing to do. So we did that, and after that, I bounced around. I did a couple of things. I did some projects with the Detroit Public Television. I did some not-for-profit work. I found the same joy out of creating events for other people as I did for my own, even though they might be smaller. The Leukemia Foundation wanted to have a sailing regatta in Port Huron. That was a fun summer, boy. I went up there. We had 130 sailboats set up, and they were doing fundraising for leukemia. And when those boats went out and the sails went up, I mean, what can you say? And everybody had the same. I had to call the office because they were turning in so much money, I couldn't count it all. I called the office. I said, just send somebody else to go over and make all the money. I can't count. But you got to have that camaraderie with everybody, no matter what's going on. And you feed off of that, I guess. If you love it, you do feed off of that. So I was doing a lot of different events for different people. Yeah, the event I did for Detroit Public Television was a pretty large one. That was a really, we did a African American event in Detroit, a Native American event in Mount Pleasant, and a Hispanic event in Grand Rapids, tied in with three Detroit or public television stations in those areas, recognizing outstanding support from the community by its individual people. That was a great deal of fun for the Native American people to allow you within, to open the door up to their community within their ranks. It was very special there. They're working so hard for their people. So I've been able to backdoor so many neat things, through what I do. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a privilege for people to allow me to do that.
Was there any stories or anything you think we missed in talking about like the Detroit Renaissance?
There's a zillion stories when you're working that hard. Something we didn't talk about that's pretty amusing. Wasn't amusing at the time, but bootleg marketing is rampant in major events. It really is, and you don't think about it. Now it's funny, but was not funny then. When you have a company, I won't name who you get to the event, and up and down one of the walls of windows in the Renaissance Center is the name of a company. Whatever it is, it's not kosher. It's a huge, 20-some story sign that they put up for the race, and that had to go. It was quite a surprise.
So they put up a sign like they were sponsoring and they weren't.
It was just the name of their comp the corporate of the
Oh.
company. So it just said blah blah blah, blah. It was their logo, up and down. It's pretty clever of them, I must admit, but that wasn't fair to everybody else. It just wasn't fair, so to take care of that. But this is a good one. So we're sitting there, we're running around, because the toughest part is Friday morning when you kick out the jams and find out what's wrong and what's not placed and who doesn't have a phone line and the caterers can't get to so and so and what they would say, we've got hamburgers and no ketchup. What can we just do stuff like that. But I'm looking out and suddenly in the river there is inflatable on a barge, huge Miller beer six pack. Didn't expect that. That was not our official beer. Okay. And you have to be careful about pouring rights with that too. There's restrictions and whatnot, which you can and can't do. But that you couldn't do. That was not. Again, very clever. You got to give them credit. So what do you do? Well, because it's Formula One, we're working with the Coast Guard. Okay, because there has to be a bumper space between where the track is and the water for safety's sake, because there's a bunch of boats running out there too wanting to be part of the race. So the Coast Guard was able to help us to move that barge. But who would have thought? I mean, who would have thought? Now, signage, you expect bootleg signage to be going out outside of. Okay, so I would always be walking around with my little, you know, my little knife and whatnot, and going, and I was at the entranceway, and I saw there was a wine cooler sign. It just would tick me off, because these people wouldn't come to us, and they'd put free stuff up. So I've got my walkie-talkie and my beeper and all my stuff on my phone, and I'm cutting it down. And because I'm on my way back to the trailer, and I just will throw it in there. So, and I've got this thing, and I can feel somebody behind me watching me. And there's a mounted policeman standing behind me. And I look at him, and I go, no, 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 no. Look, I've got my credential. I've got my walkie-talkie. I've got my radio. I'm official. Why would anybody walk around with all this stuff, you know? And he laughed. And thank goodness. And he said, where are you going with that? And I said, I'm going to take it back to the marketing trailer and put it there because it's a bootleg sign. He laughed, and he said, okay. But, I mean, there's moments like that that you go, that wouldn't have happened at any other job.
So that happened, like, pretty much every event?
Well, there would be something that would happen that would take you by surprise. That's what I would tell my partner. I said, this is what they pay us for. They pay us for problem solving, which is true, and getting through it without getting arrested or anything, you know. And telling, and the bootleg merchandise would just get me so mad. You know, there'd be people selling merchandise, and you'd have to tell them to go away. And you know they wouldn't go away, because they could sell things cheaper than, you know, anything else. But, and they'd argue with you, and yeah, it just was really frustrating. So, but there was always something. People were clever. People were clever. In those. Or they'd call you at the last minute. Like, no one had ever thought of this before. A guy would call me up and say, hey, listen. They'd always give me the goofy calls from the front desk, you know. I got one for you. Okay. Guy said, did you guys ever think of selling T-shirts? Now, this is like 5 years into the race. You know, we've been doing this for years. We want to sell your T-shirts. And I go, no, we pretty much got that covered, you know, already. So, it's just, but it was amazing, the crazy phone calls you would get and the things that would happen. But you'd have to think on your feet. Yeah, it was fun. But on the other hand, it's a lot of pressure when you get there. Other jobs, you would have deadlines throughout the year. Our deadline, boom, everything was at the same time. You know, everything hit the fan at the same time. And you'd have to just sit there and wait for it. Mm-hmm. You know, if you get 4 or 5 hours of sleep a night, that'd be a pretty big deal. Because you were there late doing the debrief and fixing things you could for the next day. And then next morning you'd start again, see what little surprises would be laying in wait for you. And you get invited to great parties, but you couldn't go to them. I mean, you'd have to be there at 5 or 6 in the morning, you know, to start all over again. And that was that. But a lot of fun. It was like getting your bachelor's degree, your master's, and your PhD. You couldn't have learned any of that in class. No.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Was there any other things you wanted to add before we wrap up?
I'm trying to think. Merchandising. Food and beverage was always interesting, like I said, because there was no running water or anything else there. And a lot of people were not excited about the Port-a-Johns, but there was nothing you could do, you know. And the poor Port-a-John people, they'd have to come in every night. This is a very wonderful conversation, but they'd have to pump everything out and clean everything up, you know, and it worked. I mean, people expected it. One of our sponsors kind of went overboard and put a table outside of the Port-a-John area that was in, put like tissues and aspirin and other things I won't even begin to tell you about, and put it out there for the people. So the ladies, he said, would feel comfortable. He was telling me this, and his wife looked at me like, meh. I don't know. He was the one who showed up on Belle Isle when we had rain and mud in white slacks.
Oh boy.
Yeah, so that's pretty much what we had. But that became his problem, didn't it? So, but it really was a lot of fun, and I'm glad we could impact the city. Oh, that's what I should say. The Galligan's was a restaurant downtown that was very popular at the time. I think it's Tom's Oyster Bar now. Now they have a roof now, part of the restaurant. That was because they opened the roof up because of us, because they could sell the roof out to a sponsor, to somebody who was entertaining during the Grand Prix. And it stayed that way. So there were a lot of things that went on that we could point to that were because of what we did. So yeah, it was a lot of fun, and every day was different. Crazy. My partner would come in with those little individual containers of Maalox, and we'd throw them down and start the day.
Well, thank you. That's very interesting.
Oh, it was. But like I said, the most fascinating time of my life. McCabe was right. It does spoil you for other jobs. It was just absolutely fascinating, a wonderful education, and I am very grateful for the privilege of being able to do that.
Well, thank you. Okay, you were talking about the last day.
Oh, absolutely. We were in the office. When McCabe was having his last day, it was very sad. He went through his things, and he had a large credenza, and he had some sweatshirts and some wine glasses, and he gave each of us a chance to pick one of those things to take with us. Ugh. And you probably have heard that he was called nicknamed Champagne Bob, and people have asked me if there was a reason for that. And, oh yeah, there was. There was champagne in his office. Many times we popped many champagne bottles in that office, and we did that day too, and popped them off, and would pour champagne to celebrate a good race, to celebrate a new contract when Formula One was over. We didn't know if we were all going to be working again, and he signed a contract with IndyCar, and so another reason to celebrate. And definitely he liked to celebrate with champagne with us. You could see the secretary would be getting out the glasses and the ice, and we'd have to run and find the ice and get the make up. But yeah, it was a traditional thing with him, and that was just one of the things that made him special. And he would stick up for you. There were a couple of times things were doing bad to us, and I would have to report it to him, and he would immediately. There are a couple of times he called me on his side of the desk, can you imagine, to talk to somebody about something they were doing, or called the president of one of our sponsors to say, "You guys can't do that. That's not right." Oh, to know that somebody's got your back. We were very loyal to him because of that. He's a good guy. We miss him. He passed away not long ago, and all of us were back there, and his son was wise enough, by the way, to have champagne at his at his funeral reception, and we all were telling stories up the wazoo. Yeah, one of a kind. But hang on, he hung out with Max Fisher and all those guys, so yeah, it was again a very special time.
Thank you for sharing that.